threw a little whipped cream and a cherry on top just to finish it off. Well, my daughter swiped the cherry, so I didn't get to experience that. So.
Oh, geez. See, this is why you don't have kids, man. They steal your cherries. What's up, guys? This is Zach, and you have just stepped into the dark blue. I've got a super fun episode for you guys today. I've got the dudes from 90 Second Beer Review here today, and we are going to do a total 100% beer-focused episode. So pretty excited to talk to these guys and just basically see what they do here. It's pretty cool to get such a quick rundown on beer. So I've got Ryan and Howard here from 90 Second Beer Review. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Thanks for having us.
Pretty good, man. I'm just really curious what kind of sparked this for you guys and what got it started?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story, I guess. It's really kind of necessity that it came out of, or maybe not necessity, but more want. So, you know, it actually started off where I was sitting right here in my basement and talking to a couple buddies, and we would have beer shares regularly. So we would kind of go through and everybody would bring a couple beers and you try them. And there were some that were fantastic. There were some that weren't as great. And, you know, you kind of sit there going, ah, I wish it was a little bit hoppier, or I wish it was a little bit juicier. If it had a little bit stronger body, it might have been a little bit nicer. So, you know, we just kind of sat there going, here, you know, and out of that, the idea was if somebody had a short format beer review that when they were going in, they can pick and choose beers, recent beers that were reviewed, and you can kind of say, okay, this one might be for me. Because it would be great if there was just something out there that you would be able to kind of get a pre-approval on beers. So when you see it on the shelf and you're going, odds are you're probably going off the label, right? If it's a fancy label, it looks great, you're going to pick it off and say, let's give this one a try. And just trying to make sure that it's giving what you actually expect out of the beer.
Nice. Yeah, that's really awesome. Because, I mean, like, I definitely do that. Like, that's a part of the reason I picked this one, because I really like the label. It's super classy. You know, this White Lodge from Holy Mountain is, like, it just looks classy and simple. And it's something that my eye just went to, you know? And so, and then I like the style of beer. That's great, you know? I don't know what's inside it until I take it home. So.
Right. And that's the tough part. And, you know, it's both the fun part and the tough part of the beer industry. You know, a lot of times in the wine industry, the labels are pretty toned down. They're pretty similar across the board. There's not really any rules in the beer industry. I mean, everybody's advertising it and trying to get their own character about their brewery, about their beer. You know, they're using all these different adjectives and descriptors on the beer. And a lot of times that comes through in the beer, but sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, when we were getting started, one of the biggest things I used to hear from people that liked craft beer is, you know, we've gotten to a point where the beer aisle is almost overwhelming. You know, you've got hundreds of options with all these different styles and tons of descriptors. And it's, even for somebody who likes craft beer, it's tough to pick through that. And so, you know, even if somebody doesn't live in New York or North Carolina and can't find the specific beer we're drinking that day, maybe they realize that they like a New England IPA, they like the sound of the flavor profile. And the next time they're at the store, they see that term New England IPA, and maybe that clicks with them and they feel more comfortable going out and purchasing it and knowing roughly what to expect.
Yeah, totally. I find that a lot when I go out with friends actually who don't drink a lot of beer. They're like, you know, they'll tell me, oh yeah, I have a beer once in a while. It's okay, whatever. You know, and then we'll go to a beer bar, we'll go to a brewery or something, and I'll kind of walk them through what they like and figure out, like, okay, so what kind of flavors do you like? And then I'll just guide them toward that kind of flavor profile, and they're like, oh my God, I really like this, you know?
Yeah, that's something that's really developed out of this is that, you know, I think when we started it, the focus was on people who know beer and they're kind of going out and trying to guide them. What I found was as it progressed, it became a situation where it was educating those who don't know beer as well, you know, and I think there's a lot of misconceptions about beer in that, you know, somebody had a beer when they were in college and all of a sudden now it's completely different. You know, the beer industry has changed so much. You know, the craft beer scene has blown up, and through that, there's a lot of different styles, a lot of different quality, variety. You know, an IPA from 10 years ago is not an IPA now. And,
right.
that's something that we're trying to teach people and explain to them, because so often you get, I don't like beer. And you're like, well, what do you mean you don't like beer? They're like, oh, like, it's awful. It's horrible. I'm like, well. Okay.
It's because you don't like Bud Light.
Exactly.
Yeah. So actually that takes me to my next question. Just, I want to know, what were your first tastes of craft beer, and like, how did it change your perspective on it? Like, tell me the story. When was your first taste of a good, really good beer?
So it's funny. We were talking about this the other day, and you know, for me, I would say it was kind of an evolution out. So when I was in college, I was drinking all the light beers. That's kind of what you did, you know? And then it progressed to probably my senior year of college. I think I got my hands on like a Leinenkugel or something like that. And you start drinking Leinenkugel and
Summer Shandy.
Yeah, exactly. Summer Shandy. I think it was Sunset Wheat was like another one. And then you have like all the Sam Adams, and kind of move into that. And then you're going, okay, so there's more out there. And then you get out of college, and we kind of looked around. We're like, hey, there's a brewery like, you know, 5 miles away. Let's go to that. And I would say Blue Point Toasted Lager, which at the time was craft. Now they've been bought by Anheuser, but that was probably my first like real craft beer that I was like, oh wow, this is cool. Like, I'm at a brewery, I'm hanging out, there's like dogs everywhere, you know. This is nice. I could do this.
Yeah, and I would say I was kind of in the same boat. I mean, early on in college, I was drinking a lot of, you know, Keystone Light and all of that, you know, wonderful light beer. And, you know, me and a couple of friends started getting into, you know, the IPAs of the day, you know, the super hopped up, high IBU, really bitter stuff. And, you know, it took us a while.
Like real men.
Yeah. And, you know, we took us a while to adjust to it, and we started liking that style. But really the beer to me that I remember very clearly as my first kind of out there craft beer was Delirium. And it was right after I turned 21. I was in the local supermarket. I had easier access to craft beer. And I saw this crazy bottle with this kind of stone looking finish on the outside and a kind of an interesting label. And I had no idea what it was. I brought it home. Me and three friends in my house split it up. And it's got us really drunk because it's just high alcohol content, but right. It tasted like no beer I'd ever drank before. And that was kind of a mind-blowing experience for me in terms of like, okay, beer is not just light lagers or super bitter IPAs. There's more to it than that.
Nice. That's so funny because that was actually one of my first ones too. I don't know if you guys have Flying Saucer in either New York or North Carolina, but it's a big beer bar, a really nice kind of pub setting. That was one of the first places I went and had a Guinness, and Guinness was my first kind of, you know, not light beer, not, and it's not a craft beer, but it was just, it really kind of gave me this realization that like, oh, there's more out there that I didn't realize. And so I tried a couple of things there that I don't really remember. But the first one that really changed my world was Delirium, the Delirium Tremens or whatever. And I was in North Carolina visiting with my ex-wife, visiting her grandmother and some other family. And we were in Raleigh for the day. Her grandmother lived in New Bern. And so we went to Raleigh for the day just to check it out. And I came across that beer and I was like, oh my God, that looks really cool. So same reason. I was like, that looks really interesting. So I picked it up and tried it. And from that point on, I was like, okay.
I was like those ones in the middle, kind of the Sam Adams and stuff like that. Cause I call them gateway beers. I think they're the gateway into craft beer. But they're readily accessible. You know what you're getting. They're decent enough quality. You know, I always say that like if I'm in a supermarket, Cigar City, which is craft beer, Hialeah is readily available around me at least. They're out of Florida and they make their way up to New York pretty easy. And yeah. I know for $12, I'm picking up a 12 pack of really good beer. So
solid, yeah. That's you can't find a 12 pack in Seattle for to save your life, man. I consider myself lucky when I find a six pack for $10.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the evolution of the beer industry where, you know, it was all about that, you know, it was like the 30 rack when you were in college, and then you kind of get and you're like, oh, these six packs are pretty cool, and then all of a sudden you're like, what's a four pack and why are they 60 ounce cans?
Yeah. Funky.
Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting to see all the evolution of it and see all different sides of it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I actually saw a 2-pack of a Saison yesterday for $12, and I was like, oh man, things are changing.
Well, and it's you know, that to me has been the interesting part over the last couple of years is aside from the cost going up, it's the understanding of why that cost is going up for some of these beers. You know, I think at first people didn't understand why they were paying $20, $25, $30 for, you know, a wild fermentation sour or some, you know, a certain barrel aged stout. You know, and I think people are starting to get educated on the time it takes to make these beers, the cost that goes into making them, and they really, you know, you're getting value for what that is, but you have to understand what it is you're buying.
Yeah, totally. Makes sense. Well, I think it's a good time to get into these beers, guys, before they get warm.
Let me just take a second to say, I am wearing this new Sheath gear and I'm freaking loving it. We're working with some friends at Sheath Underwear, and for you guys who haven't heard of it, it's like upgrading from a studio apartment to a 2-bedroom for your junk. There's no rubbing, there's no chafing, and I refuse to wear anything else.
I'm wearing some right now. I've got a Sheath hat on. They have more than just underwear, and I basically switched out my entire wardrobe of underwear for these Sheath ones. They're amazing.
Yeah. Go to sheathunderwear.com and use the promo code DARKBLUE, all caps DARKBLUE, and get 25% off your first order. That's a big deal, guys. Like, seriously.
It is. It's awesome.
Who wants to start?
I guess I'll kick it off. So I have a beer that I think is pretty cool. So this is one version of Altogether IPA. So Altogether is a worldwide collaboration that was organized by Other Half Brewing in Brooklyn. And the idea was to come up with an open source recipe that other breweries could take and use and put their own spin on it. And the only ask here was that every brewery contribute part of the proceeds to food and beverage workers in their area that are hurting due to coronavirus.
Nice. So, that's awesome.
You know, it was a cool idea. I've got 4 or 5 different breweries versions in my fridge at the moment. This version's by Full Steam Brewery in Durham. It's one of my favorite local breweries. They put their own little twist on it. They use craft malt from Epiphany Craft Malt, which is one of 3 malt houses in North Carolina. And Epiphany is the one that's down the road from us in Durham. So hyper-local ingredients, and the base recipe is just your standard hazy IPA, you know. And, you know, when we go through the process, Ryan can talk a little bit more while I'm pouring this about the beer cleaning, the beer selection process.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think one of the things that when we're reviewing beers that we really focus on is starting point is making sure you have clean glassware. So, you know, I can hold my glass up to you and you can kind of see that it's bubble free on the beer portion, right? So nothing sticking to the glass, because that just paints the flavor a little bit.
So that's what the bubbles on the glass mean?
Yep.
That it's not clean?
Yeah. Yeah. So it could be a clean glass, right? It could be clean from the sense that you washed and you cleaned it, but by using a normal soap as opposed to specific beer cleaning soap, it will leave a residue. So it's kind of like when you brush your teeth and you have a toothpaste. The toothpaste stays behind on your teeth and kind of leaves a coating. That's the same thing the soap does. The soap kind of leaves a coating to keep it clean, supposedly. But it also kind of has all the flavor of the beer stick to it. So it taints the flavor a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and then with regards to the review process itself, you know, we really try, you know, neither of us are, you know, professional beer judges or anything along those lines. And we're really not trying to be with the approach. You know, what we're trying to do is, you know, drink the beer as we would imagine, you know, your average beer drinker would drink it when they're coming home. You know, we're not doing a blind tasting. We see the label, we see the description. Yeah. And we're really just trying to give that honest assessment. And so, you know, for me, the first thing I'm going to do is pour it and take a look at what it looks like. You know, this one is kind of a darker golden color. It's hazy. It's not 100% opaque. But it does have a nice haze. And then I usually just try to get a little bit of a sense of the aroma. So You know, this one, it's tons of tropical fruit, maybe a little bit of citrus, but really heavy on the tropical fruit. And, you know, the aroma, I think some beer drinkers maybe have to learn to smell the beer first, get that sense, because it really does change the tasting experience. It's another sense, and it rounds out what you're going to taste in the beer. You know, drinking a beer without smelling it, you're not going to get the full flavor profile. So yeah, this one has a great tropical fruit aroma.
One of the things too with the beer is that using certain glassware for certain beers is, you know, we're using Tequus in this one because we're both drinking IPAs, and it's designed to kind of funnel the aroma out towards you. So
yeah,
it changes the experience.
Awesome. Yep. That's cool. Yeah, that's one thing I don't know a lot about. I know just very little about the shape of the glass and the, you know, what the purpose is there. So that's kind of,
yeah, I'd say probably the most versatile. I really enjoy the Tequus because I think they're probably the most versatile glass. Belgian tulips are right up there also. So if you're somebody that's out there just looking for what is a good glass to kind of use with everything, you just want to throw one in the, you know, in the cabinet and use it for all your beers, those are probably the best two. I was watching the Cicerone. They have a series of videos they're doing now where you're essentially the master Cicerone. And he said that he drinks almost everything out of a Belgian tulip, that's his go-to. It's so versatile that you can use any beer out of it. So
okay,
if it's good enough for a master Cicerone, it's probably good enough.
So,
and with the beer selection, the glass selection process, I mean, you know, for anybody that's trying to figure out what glasses to use, I mean, there are tons of great charts out there that lay out the different glass shapes and what styles they go with.
Yeah.
And even if you go online and shop for them, I mean, there are a lot of companies that make kind of a preset 4 to 6 glass set with a variety of glass shapes that'll really work for pretty much any beer that you're going to try. And so that's a good starting point. They're usually only about $30, $35, you know, for the set. And so for people that are trying to get into drinking nice beer and trying to pair it with the right glass, it's a really easy way to kind of amp up your bar a little bit and get glassware that fits the style.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. So the next thing that I'm doing with this beer is just getting, you know, an initial couple of tastes and just trying to get a sense for the mouthfeel. You know, how thick, how heavy of a beer is it? Is it, you know, really crisp with a lot of kind of almost rough carbonation? Is it smooth and creamy? You know, what am I getting out of that? Because that's going to transfer over into the flavor. And so, you know, for this beer, it's kind of, you know, in terms of the heaviness of the beer, it's kind of a medium mouthfeel, which is pretty typical of an IPA. You know, hazy IPAs, because they're unfiltered, they usually have some level of, you know, flaked wheat or oats and the hop particles left in them. They usually have kind of almost a pillowy, really soft mouthfeel. This one has some of that, not a ton of it. And so I'll take a couple sips and try to just get that and then go into the flavor. And this one honestly smells tastes a lot like it smells. It's, you know, a good burst of tropical fruit up front, and there's a little bit of kind of citrus rind bitterness that is really great for balancing it out. It doesn't make it, you know, this overwhelming juice bomb that kind of gets exhausting to drink after 4 to 8 ounces, where you're just getting sweet juice over and over again. It's kind of a well-balanced beer.
Nice.
And one of the things too that we always look for, and you know, that one, it doesn't specifically say it, and actually the beer that I'm drinking at the moment doesn't say it either, but a lot of times you'll find certain beers that will guide you down a certain path, and they'll tell you the ingredients that they use. They'll tell you, so you might see it's a mango orange peach hazy IPA. So right. You kind of sit there going, okay, I'm expecting to get mango, orange, peach. That's, you know, if you start getting something else, you go, okay, that's a little bit off. So I have another beer here, which is a cherry cola float dream. It's a combination, a collaboration between Billy Oak and Evil Twin that I actually just picked up earlier today.
That sounds great.
You're kind of sitting there going, all right, cherry cola float. I'm expecting it to taste like a cherry cola float. So I think that's part of the evaluation criteria for us is if you're telling me that it's going to taste like something, I expect it to taste like something.
It should, right. Yeah, totally.
Nothing like that. I'm a bit disappointed. So
yeah. And then, you know, for us at the, you know, the end product and what we're trying to get to and what, you know, we think helps the drinker the most is, you know, somewhere between 2 and 6 sentences or so, describe the beer and try to give in kind of simple terms what you're smelling, what you're tasting, what the experience is, to Ryan's point, does it match up with the description? And then the thing that we really focus on the most at the end of that, and you'll see it's the last thing in our review, is the recommendation. You know, would you drink it again? Would you purchase it again? You know, what are your thoughts on that beer after you've tried it? And then that recommendation kind of correlates to the number rating that's in there, which we focus on a lot less. We know that, you know, the average person that's following on Instagram really likes a number just for some sort of kind of level setting.
Yeah.
But for us, really, what we're trying to get to is, can we explain to you pretty simply what the beer is going to be like when you crack it open? And then based on our impressions of A, how delicious it is, and B, whether or not it matches up with what was advertised on the can, would we buy it again? Would we drink it?
Awesome. I like that.
And you recently guys know, we've been mixing in an additional layer too on that, and actually looking at maybe like a food pairing or maybe time to drink it, because that's also important. I actually, we were picking out beers for this, and I had pulled out a stout, and all of a sudden I realized that it was going to be 80 something degrees today. I went, they're the last thing I'm drinking is a stout today. So
yeah,
I had to pull an audible and go for something else. So, you know, I think kind of saying that this beer is great for backyard, you know, barbecues, or try this one when you're eating, you know, something, you know, that's kind of the focus as well, is trying to give you a little bit more background.
So do you guys use a like 1 to 5 rating or 1 to 10 rating, or?
Yeah, so we go 1 to 5 and we do it on kind of 0.25 increments. So kind of, if you think about the number relative to the recommendation, the general idea is kind of 4 or above, we're buying and purchasing that again. And then it's just kind of a level of, once you get up towards 5, it's something that we're looking to have in the fridge whenever it's available. You know, it's just that good.
Gotcha.
You know, in kind of the high 3s, it's usually stuff that we probably drink again. We might buy it again. Once you get towards the lower 3s, that's usually stuff that we're just not as big a fan of. We, you know, we may not drink or purchase it again. We're not loving execution, or it doesn't match up at all with what the can says, which is, you know, kind of, again, kind of a no-no for us in terms of, you've advertised it as one thing, it should be that when you open the can, because somebody bought that beer based on that description. And I think, you know, to what some of what Ryan and I have talked about, I mean, I think one of the more interesting things we've discovered as we've gone through this process is, the more beers we drink, the more styles we try, our palates are adjusting constantly. I mean, you're talking about a 10 to 14 year span where your palate is adjusted. And I mean, in the last year and a half, just in the last year and a half, I've had a dramatic change in my palate as I try all these different beers. And, you know, you can really appreciate a style, even if a style isn't your favorite. You can appreciate a well-done beer in that style, and you can appreciate that it's hitting the flavor notes that it should for the style. And so, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a beer that I want to drink every single day. But if it's hitting all of the flavors and all the things that I know should be part of that style, I can appreciate that and I can enjoy that.
Yeah,
it's absolutely interesting when you have a situation where you have a beer that's not really your style, and you're kind of sitting there going, this is just not for me. I probably wouldn't drink this again, but I can appreciate that this is really well executed for the style. You know, I sit there and go, I don't like this style, and I kind of like this beer, so it must be really good for the style. So that's a factor that we kind of sit there and go, okay, I can appreciate this, you know.
Cool. Yeah, I've actually been finding that a little bit more recently, that I've been appreciating very simple beers more than I used to. And without the crazy flavor profiles and using all the different spices or fruits or whatever. So I have been getting a lot more simple. Just easy stuff, like easy drinking, you know, like this is just like a simple, like,
absolutely.
Anyway, I can talk more about that later, but, Do you guys want to give us an example of what a 90-second beer review sounds like?
Yeah, sure. So Howard, you want to run with that one? Maybe I'll do one quick one on my beer afterwards.
Yeah. So I mean, writing this one out, first thing, again, I'm going to talk about the appearance. So I'm going to say, you know, it pours kind of a dark golden color with you know, a moderate amount of haze. You know, it's got aromas of tropical fruit and maybe a little bit of citrus. The mouthfeel on this beer is medium, slightly pillowy, with a tropical fruit flavor that kind of jumps out at you right from the beginning. and then kind of finishes with just a little bit of citrus rind bitterness to balance it out. You know, I think this is a really solidly executed version of a hazy IPA. You know, for me, this is probably in that kind of four range. This is something that I would definitely drink and purchase again. It's a good example of the style, and it's a really enjoyable IPA.
Nice. Good rundown.
Yeah, a little lead in for the beer that I'm having here. It's a Root and Branch Life and Fate 4. So it's a double India Pale Ale, 8% alcohol. This is actually a little bit interesting. I actually went to high school with the brewer of this, and he works at Evil Twin and started up his own Root and Branch Brewery, which they're in the process of actually getting their brewery up and running. It could be open fairly soon, I would think. But their focus really has been traditionally on the double India Pale Ale style. Cool. Probably more what you would call maybe like a New England style. Creamier, lighter, hazy, juicy. So just before I get into that, maybe I'll just note that they're at the moment doing what's called nomadic brewing, which I think is a pretty interesting topic. We're seeing a lot of breweries kind of going towards that when they're starting out. So it's a way of getting in, brewing in other facilities. They obviously pay a cost to that facility to use them, but it takes away the upfront cost of needing a brewery in order to brew beer and produce it on a mass scale. Cool. And that's what they're doing at the moment. Maybe I'd say 12% project they did something with, Great South Bay Brewery, they've done a bunch with. I think they did something with Evil Twin, handful of others, Hudson Valley and a few others. So it's a really cool thing that's going on in the beer industry, and something that we found with the industry in general is that brewers want to help each other out. So this is a way of getting in, kind of being able to get your product out there, build a bit of a name, do it at a low cost so that you can get up and running. So cool. Maybe with that, you know, I already kind of led in with the style. So what I would say is very similar to Howard's beer. This is a hazy IPA. You know, Root and Branch always has a very good oat base that comes through with it. So they usually use a multi-oat base when they're doing their IPAs. Produces a very silky, smooth, creamy body to it, which this does have. On the mouthfeel, tons of fruit. On the flavor, tons of fruit. You're getting a lot of tropical fruit. So I would say mango, passion fruit really come through on this. And a little bit of orange as well. Virtually no bitterness. So I think for a lot of people, and you know, I would normally put this in the recommendation, for a lot of people, you would see that they tend to lean away from IPAs. So I would recommend that somebody who's not a big traditional IPA fan try something like this that's very juicy and low bitterness. I'd probably put it at 4.5, which for me is, whenever I see it, I'm going out to buy it. I am, you know, if there's a release, I'm going out to that release. I would be willing to wait in line for it. And I would definitely drink it whenever it's around.
Nice. It's pretty good. I like that. Yeah, these are really, really useful. I like the idea that you can just come and just get a quick rundown on the beer. And it's like when I go shopping for a beer, if I'm don't know what I want, you know, and I ask the person who's working there, you know, what should I get? That's exactly what I want to hear, is something like that. So.
Yeah, the idea is, picture you're talking to a buddy and you said, "Hey man, did you try this beer?" And he's like, "Yeah, what'd you think?" "Oh yeah, it was pretty good. You know, it was creamy. It had like good flavor from this, and this. You know, I'd buy it again." Like, that's the concept.
Nice. Okay. Sweet. Well, I'm going to give it a try. We'll see if I can do what you guys do.
Go for it.
All right. So this is one of those ones that walks you through it a little bit. Actually, just gives you all the ingredients, which is pretty cool. This is the essential beer from Matchless. Is it? They call it a drinking beer, and so
I like that.
And so on here it says we've got a 4.8% alcohol, I believe, and we've got Citra and Vic Secret hops, and see, descriptions are golden, tropical, citrus, and essential, it says. So,
sounds good to me. That,
right? It does. Golden, tropical, citrus, and essential. So when I opened it up, honestly, the first thing I smelled was like a sweet wheat kind of scent. And so I guess a little bit of that tropical fruit on top of the wheat. but I don't taste any of that. All I taste is mostly wheat, and it's got a nice refreshing finish on the back end. So I think the fruit maybe balances out the wheat a little bit and kind of makes it more refreshing, and it lingers on the tongue a little bit, which is it's not an overwhelming like aftertaste or anything, but it is good. Solid, like I want to take another drink, especially after going for a run or cutting the grass or something like that. So
that's good. And I like one of the things that you talked about in there in terms of, you know, how does the beer finish? Because a lot of times that can do a lot in terms of leaving you with an impression of what you want to do next with that beer. You know, if it's a super bitter West Coast IPA that's kind of over the top, a lot of times it's going to leave a really dry, bitter aftertaste. And It might be kind of tough to drink more than one or two of those. Whereas something like that that finishes really clean and refreshing, you know, you can go through a couple of those pretty easily, and it makes that beer useful for different purposes.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, yesterday I made some chicken, shredded chicken for tacos, and I was drinking a Pilsner yesterday from Freem, and poured a little bit of that Pilsner in the pan with the chicken, baked it in there for a little bit, and it was so good. So
that's not good.
We've
been getting more into using beer in our food, so I think like beer bread is something that I've made. Actually put out a couple beer floats recently, which I've been experimenting with. You take some ice cream, drop it in like a nice stout.
Yes.
The stout that I would have used today if it wasn't 80 something degrees outside is called Cuvée de Candy Bars from Evil Twin. And brings a lot of peanut butter cup, you know, Reese's pieces. Reese's are in it. I think there was M&M's and a couple other candies that I can't remember what they are.
But that sounds,
you know, you're getting a ton of chocolate, ton of peanut butter, you know, very thick and creamy. So when you drop a thing of ice cream in there, that creaminess of the ice cream works really well with it, balances the vanilla and the chocolate.
Oh, you know, that sounds good.
Threw a little whipped cream and a cherry on top just to finish it off. Well, my daughter swiped the cherry, so I didn't get to experience that. So.
Oh, geez. See, this is why you don't have kids, man. They steal your cherries.
Exactly.
that's why Ryan's got kids. I don't have kids. Sometimes I'll be sitting down to have a beer at the end of the day, and I'll text Ryan about it. He's like, I'm running around in the backyard just trying to keep up with my daughter, and so. He's got to wait until 9:30 when she's asleep to really dig into beers.
That's funny.
Yeah, no reviews for me during the day. This is like the exception where I'm sitting there going, I never drink beer before like 9 o'clock just because I don't have the ability to. With two kids at home, you're playing like a zone D. Like, oh, this one's in the living room? Okay, I got that one. You know?
You're like, but honey, I have to do a podcast. I'm sorry.
Very supportive. I can guarantee you that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Anyone who will let you take an hour break to drink a couple beers over a podcast is a pretty good support system.
Absolutely.
Well, quick question. How do you guys know each other living in different states like that? How did you meet?
Yeah. So, it actually goes back probably maybe like 10 years ago.
Just about 10 years.
Nice. Yeah, we both worked in insurance, or still both work in insurance, I should probably say. We're not doing this. So Howard happened to be an underwriter at the time. I was a broker, so we were interacting with each other on a regular basis. And through that, you just kind of get to talking. And both like the same sports teams, I guess with the exception of our hockey team, we're an Islander fan, and he's a Devil fan. And, you know, just kind of came up, naturally formed a relationship, kind of go out, have some beers, have drinks. And, you know, here it is 10 years later, he decided to move down to North Carolina. I stuck up here in New York, and, you know, it's still working.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
And that was kind of part of the thing. I mean, when, you know, Ryan was talking about, you know, at first kind of how the 90-second beer review came about, you know, when he started it the first couple of days, he was just, you know, posting some reviews, kind of trying to figure out the format. I saw one of them come across, and I called him up, and I'm like, hey, this is a pretty cool idea. If you ever need somebody in another part of the country so that you can, you know, diversify the beers that you're trying and the breweries you're reaching, you know, let me know. And we just started from there. We started putting some reviews out. We tweaked the formula a little bit. You know, we did a lot of reading and education at first. And it's been a really great opportunity to just kind of work on this passion project and just something that we really enjoy doing.
Nice. That's awesome. That's really cool. I love having those things that kind of bridge the gap when you're at a distance with somebody like that, you know, somebody that you connect with so well. It's really cool to have that opportunity to come together on a regular basis and do something that you really enjoy together and still have that connection, you know?
Absolutely.
Pretty cool. All right. Well, you guys want to do another one?
Yeah, let's do another one.
I just poured number two here. So this is what I teased before, the Cherry Cola Float Dream. So that's J-R-E-A-M. So the Dream is the portion that comes from Frilio. So they're out of Maryland. And then the Cola portion is from Evil Twin here in New York. That so they have their soda series line, which they've done a bunch of. We've reviewed their cherry, trying to remember the exact name of it, cherry pepper, sour pepper, something like that, sour cherry pepper. We reviewed their Midtown Dew recently, if you can kind of do the math on that one. So, you know, I think historically, I have high expectations for this beer because historically their soda series is awesome. And Burley Oak's Dream Series is awesome. So looking at this thing, I'm kind of sitting there going, I have high expectations. I'm hoping that it lives up to those prior beers that I've had.
So, yeah, for sure. Oh, geez, it looks like cherry coat. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a nice red color. You can see that I've actually switched up the glass here. So I went with, I guess, kind of like a – I don't even know what kind of glass you would use for this, to be completely honest, because it's kind of two different things that are multiple. So the Dreams are normally a sour – beer, and then very thick, sour, slushy-like type beer, and obviously the cola beers are cola-like, so I'm kind of sitting here, I guess this is probably the right glass. I kind of went with a kind of glass
think,
here.
It looks like a milkshake glass would have been your best choice.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably the way to go, right? So this is called a sour ale brewed with milk sugar, caramelized barley, vanilla, sweet dark cherry, and cola syrup. So that's what we got, and I'll give it a try now. Yeah. So definitely getting the cherry, definitely getting the cola. So it does taste like a cherry cola. You know, I think one of the things that we like doing as we do these two is, you know, we never really judge something based off the first sip. You know, you kind of sit there and drink it through the full experience because temperature plays a big role in beer as well.
Yep.
So what you might get in the beginning might be different than what you get at the end. So we start off, and there's certain ranges that you should have beers at. IPAs tend to be a little bit lower in the temperature scale. Stouts tend to be a bit higher. And you'll notice that as an IPA kind of warms in temperature, maybe going from like 45 degrees up to 52, 53 degrees, you might notice a difference in the flavors that come out of it. Generally, the fruits open up a little bit more. You get a little bit more sweetness coming out of it.
Absolutely.
You can, for somebody at home, that if you're sitting there going, okay, I don't know how I feel about this beer, you can maybe sit there and just put your hands on it and just warm it up a little bit, or wait on it a little bit, and you might end up liking it more, you know, a little bit later, or maybe vice versa, maybe like it less if that's not your thing. So you know to drink it quicker.
Yeah. Nice. That's I noticed the same thing with coffee as well. As the coffee cools down, you have the different flavors that come out in that too. So it's kind of interesting how all these natural things, the grains, the beans and all that kind of stuff, just that temperature really plays a part in how it tastes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's something that you can also experiment with. You know, it's something you can experiment with just in terms of, you know, what temperature you're storing the stuff in, you know, what kind of, you know, are you using a chilled glass or using a room temperature glass, you know, how long are you leaving it out for? You know, those things will dramatically change the way a beer tastes. And so you can play around with that a little bit.
Yeah. Have you guys ever been to Twin Peaks or seen a Twin Peaks?
Yep.
Where they serve all their beers just below freezing?
Yep.
Right? Yeah. It feels so good going down. But so yeah, some of them it's just like, is it supposed to be this temperature? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it takes away the flavor so that it goes down much quicker. So
right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So as I'm sipping on this beer, it's very interesting because having the background of the two different series that they have, the body is very much that dream series, very on the thicker side, not as thick as it would normally be, but on the thicker side, kind of what I mentioned before, kind of smoothie, slushy-like. So as you're drinking it, you kind of get that a lot of fruit coming through. The cherry, I'd say there's a little bit of raspberry also that's kind of coming through in it. And it kind of makes for a kind of a thicker sipping type beer. This isn't the kind of beer that, like a Pilsner, that you'd want to have right after you mow the lawn. I think that for me, this is kind of, it's good for summer, but it's one that you kind of sit there and drink casually, not kind of chug it down quick.
Yeah. Nice. You have one and then, done.
And the, this is definitely a one and done. I'm trying to think what the, this one's only 4.8% alcohol, which is good. Normally these are definitely higher alcohol with other ones that I've had. So they're really one and done. This one you could actually enjoy and function after if you have to chase around two kids like I do.
Yep. Nice.
The kind of last thing that I would note on this is tartness. So people get turned off with sours if they're overly tart. This one is, it's nice. It's a good balance of tartness and sweetness, just a mild tartness to it. I think the cherry cola really sweetness that balances it. So, you know, I would be willing to put a rating on this one already. I think I have a pretty good feel for it. And, you know, I would say this is probably same as what I did with the Root and Branch, actually. Very different styles, but this is also a 4.5 for me, where I sit there and go, I would absolutely drink this again. It's nice. Historically kind of where I've rated both of these two series, which makes sense, I guess. And yeah, I would stand in line. I would definitely have more with this. I think this is the kind of beer that you can definitely have with a dessert. So just based off the flavors, I'm kind of sitting there going, okay, if you had like a cherry pie with this, it would work really well. You know, kind of bring a little bit of that breadiness, bring in maybe some cinnamon type flavors to it.
I was thinking strawberry and rhubarb.
There you go, strawberry rhubarb. Maybe I could see a nice like apple pie as well, like the apple cinnamon streusel kind of thing. That would work really well.
Yeah, that sounds great.
You guys are getting hungry over here.
Right. Funny thing is I stay up pretty late, and I actually just woke up probably about 30 minutes before the podcast. So I'm ready. The pie thing, I'm just like, oh, man, I feel like I should make something nice and sweet for breakfast.
It's interesting because, there's different beers play really well with different things. So we should have another beer in here if we actually go that far. But that one, very light beer, very mild flavors. And that one would actually work very well with salad. And you can normally not what people expect when you're throwing out like a beer. You normally don't hear like salad, but the second I started drinking it, I was going like a salad with maybe some like cranberries, almonds, a little bit of goat cheese, and like a blackberry vinaigrette, because that one's a blackberry wit. That would be incredible. And, I think the full gamut, because beer and cheese go together very well. They're historically paired together. Yep. You can get you can get like a grilled cheese type thing if you go with like an amber ale and a cheddar put together, which is a pretty cool combination. But, sure. A lot more out there. You can pretty much pair any beer, you can pair any food with a beer, because there's so many beers that's so versatile that you can really find a complement in almost anything.
You want to do your second one there, Howard?
Yeah. Yes. So this one actually kind of goes a little bit to what you were talking about in terms of, as you've tried all, more beers, you've really kind of gotten into kind of the, what I would call the beer flavored beers, the simpler stuff. So this is a dry hop Pilsner called Marlboro. It's made by Crystal Coast Brewing, which is out in Eastern North Carolina in Morehead City.
The can looks like a pack of cigarettes, of Marlboro cigarettes. So I know you guys can't see it, but it's he held it up, and I was just like, is that cigarettes or beer? I can't.
Yeah, and so this is the way that they spelled it. Marlboro is a district in New Zealand. And so they use some cool New Zealand hops for this one. But kind of to what you were saying, I mean, as you drink more of these beers and you drink these wild, cherry, you know, cola beers and, you know, candy stouts and things like that, you really get appreciation for just a really well done kind of simple beer. And, you know, craft pilsners are really kind of having a moment in the last couple of years. You know, most brewers, if you read interviews with them or you ask them, when they're drinking on their personal time, they're drinking a good pilsner, a simple lager. You know, they're not always drinking, you know, double and triple IPAs with a bunch of, you know, adjunct ingredients in them. And for me, the dry hop pilsner has been a really great style over the last couple of years. And so, you know, it's really light and clear. It's very crisp. But when you dry hop it like that, you get a little bit of kind of that floral, fruity flavor that you would get maybe in a hazy IPA, but without the alcohol content and the heaviness.
So
this one is, this to me is a fantastically done one. It's, you know, you get a little bit of that tropical fruit aroma on the nose, but a lot of it is just kind of crisp, kind of floral hoppiness. And then the beer itself is a really light mouthfeel, kind of a traditional pilsner, you know, really light, really crisp, with a little bit of biscuit malt and a little bit of kind of that assertive hoppiness that you'd get in a typical pilsner. And then it just leaves you with kind of the smallest hint of tropical fruit. And so it's not, you know, any kind of overwhelming, super juicy beer, but it's just that little bit of fruit flavor on the end, which keeps it really interesting and flavorful. And I mean, this to me is a beer, you know, it's in the high 80s right now in North Carolina. I'd go right up outside right now, sit on the back deck and drink a bunch of these in the heat. And this is a perfect beer for that.
Awesome. Sounds good. Yeah, I can say, I think the only time I've ever drank as much Corona and Dos Equis as I did, more than I have anyway at any other point, was when I was in Mexico, and it was like 105 degrees even at night. And it was just like, you know what? This Dos Equis is the best thing that I could have chosen.
All beers have their situation. They all have their moment.
I'm a big fan of the lawnmower beers. So, you know, I always say on mowing your lawn, the last thing in the world you want is like a really dank IPA, because it's hot as hell. That's not what you need.
Right.
Going towards a light, something like what Howard has, a light, you know, kind of pilsner or a light lager is a great way to go, because it just kind of cools you down. It's very refreshing, very crisp.
Mm-hmm.
And Zach, I would even say, you know, even in the winter months, you know, you and I were talking before, I was out in Washington a couple months ago and got an opportunity to spend a couple of days up in the mountains in Roslyn, Washington. And there's a cool little lager focused brewery up there called Roslyn Brewing. Mm. And they make a great dark lager. And dark lager is a kind of a style that I've gained a total appreciation for over the last year.
Oh, they're so good. Yeah.
They're fantastic. And you know, even in the middle of the winter, you know, you can get a good dark lager, and it can impart a lot of the roasty notes that you would hope for in a stout or porter.
But it reminds me kind of a Kolsch as well.
Right. And you get that, you know, high 4%, low 5% ABV, a slightly lighter feel than your typical stout or porter, so it doesn't sit as heavily in your stomach.
Yeah.
And that to me, I mean, sitting in a little mountain cabin in the middle of the winter, I mean, that's a perfect beer to just, you know, sip in the middle of the afternoon.
Oh, yeah. After a good day of snowboarding, a dark lager and a plate of nachos is one of the best things. All right. Well, I'm kind of curious about this little gem here. It's kind of mysterious. It doesn't have any descriptors on it. It's just a white owl. That's it. And part of why I chose this, because I have a white owl tattoo on my chest right here. I really like the symbolism of the white owl, and the guidance and how it kind of, you know, the idea is that it kind of guides you to your next place in life. It guides you through the darkness into the light, you know. So this is called the White Lodge from Holy Mountain, and this is my first Holy Mountain beer, and I've heard a lot of really great things about Holy Mountain. And I know you were saying, Howard, that's one of the places you went to when you were here in Washington.
Yeah, it's a cool brewery. I mean, it's, you know, the tap room itself is very, you know, kind of industrial and, you know, somewhat sparsely decorated. And it's really a beer drinker's bar, but they do some great things. I mean, when I was there, we have some friends in Seattle, and Holy Mountain is their favorite brewery, hands down, in the city. And so they made a point of taking us out there, and you know, the beer selection is super unique. They use a lot of kind of one-off ingredients that you wouldn't find in most beers. And I'm really curious. I didn't get the chance to try the White Owl while I was there, so I'm curious to hear what you think.
Yeah, well, you know, it's actually kind of interesting because I just got some. When a can popped open, it sprayed, and so I got some on my fingers. And when I tasted it just then, I tasted bananas. So, you know, I'm already got bananas, but it's definitely a pretty solid Belgian white.
Oh yeah,
check that out.
Yeah, a lot of times you find that with the Belgians, you'll find a lot of banana, a lot of cloves coming through from Belgian beers. That's very true to the style.
Nice. Yeah. And that's definitely there. It's a nice pale, like yellow orange color. And let me see. You definitely smell the bananas. They're really forward, actually. And I'm not usually a huge fan of that. I don't know if you guys have seen the banana nut something ale from the
Sam Smith's.
What is it?
The Sam Smith's, like the UK bread beer.
Yeah, Sam Smith banana bread. Yep. I wasn't a huge fan of that one because it was a little too intense for me, but this one actually is really subtle flavor of bananas. And it's, you know, that's mostly what I taste, is just a really nice light banana flavor. It's a little thick on the tongue and sticks around a little bit. There's a little bitterness at the end. This is definitely one that I would get again. It's only 4.8 alcohol, so pretty easy to have a couple of them.
That's an easy warm weather drinker right there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we've got some reviews in the pocket, which is good. And I really enjoy that. And so I'm kind of curious if you guys can remember, what is your favorite brewery that you have ever been to?
Wow, that's a good question. We've been to a lot of them over the last couple of years.
I know mine. I was actually there today. So I would say that Evil Twin for me is my favorite. They opened up their new brewery probably about a year ago, if I had to guess.
What was the name again?
Evil Twin Brewing, New York City.
Oh yeah, totally.
So that's the one that I just had, actually, the Evil Twin in Burley Oak Dream is Evil Twin. And the reason why I like it so much is that it's very unique in the sense that they've built a greenhouse inside of New York City.
Cool.
So you walk up, there's a large outdoor area. There is a greenhouse. That's the only way to describe it. It's a glass house.
Yeah.
With a bunch of plants inside in the middle of New York City with like an old Chevy out front. And I think it's a Chevy Nova out front. And, you know, it's just very unique. It's very different. Great beers, pretty much everything they make. I don't think I've had too many that weren't great.
Yeah. I think for me, honestly, I'd probably stay local too. And it was actually the brewery that the first beer I had is Full Steam Brewery in Durham. And you know, that's probably one of my most common go-tos in this area. My wife and I go there pretty frequently when it's, you know, non-coronavirus. We'll be there on a Friday or a Saturday night pretty often with our dog. And you know, they've got a kind of a great like three-tiered setup. So they've got kind of the true indoor bar with, you know, air conditioning. They've got kind of like a garage space that is inside, but, you know, dog friendly, kind of has that outdoor brewery vibe with a lot of picnic tables. And then they have an outdoor alleyway and kind of front area where you can get some fresh air. And it's great beer. They're, you know, really focused on local ingredients. They work with a lot of Southern farmers and get a lot of their stuff pretty close to home. And they do a really good job of rotating, you know, seasonal local ingredients into their beers. Which, you know, makes for a really interesting experience because they rotate through a lot of different styles over the course of the year. Nice. And, you know, the exciting part is, you know, they've had a kitchen there for a while now. They were actually just before coronavirus redoing and overhauling the kitchen and kind of really putting a full restaurant in and make it a really easy place to go for kind of a full dinner and some beers on a weekend night, which is really nice.
Sweet. That sounds wonderful. I love places like that. I actually was going to say I'm going to say two, because I was just in the BrewDog outpost, the Dublin outpost.
I'm jealous, by the way. I want to check that one out.
I need to go really to the hotel.
Cool. Yeah, I know. In is it St. Louis or is it?
I think it's at Columbus.
Oh, it's Columbus. Columbus. Yeah, it looks beautiful. The Dublin outpost was just amazing, just phenomenal space. The people were really awesome. Was able actually to do an interview with the guys there, with the general manager and their beer school guy who leads the beer school. And it was just a really awesome experience, you know. And their space is just really homey and comfortable. The food is amazing. And then their beer selection is just awesome, and they're always changing it and doing new things and basically trying to make beer more accessible for people who aren't used to drinking it, which is pretty cool. And then here locally, Obetz Brewing has really kind of they're just in my heart. They're really good people. They're trying to build community around beer and everything. And, they make a really solid beer. Like, just when they say it's a porter, it's a porter. When they say it's a pilsner, it's a pilsner. When they, you know, and they're very specific, and you get what you're asking for, essentially. So it's pretty cool.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. All right, well, so I feel like I need to go have some breakfast.
Great way to start your day.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, always. But I gotta ask, how could I get a 90-second beer review glass from you guys?
Good question. So we're working on the glassware, but actually one of the things that we're about to release more formally in the coming weeks is we are going to be doing our first round of merchandise. So these branded Bills hats that I'm wearing right now, and then we have a special 90s themed 90-second beer review tank top for the summer that we're going to be releasing in a couple of weeks. And because of everything that's going on, all of the profits from sales of both of those are going to go to a fund that's helping beer industry workers during coronavirus.
Awesome.
So we'll put out some more formal details in the coming weeks, but it's something that we're really excited about. You know, it's hopefully a way that we can put some cool merchandise out there that people like, but also, you know, do some good while we're doing it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Definitely let me know, and I'll be glad to post it as well and spread the word. So.
Absolutely, appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And
pulled up the logo there for what you would be able to expect on the 90-second.
Oh, nice.
The very 90s themed.
Yeah,
it reminds me. Saved by the Bell.
Right, yep, that's what I was going to say. Yep, 90-second beer review from Saved by the Bell. It's perfect. And when you guys get glasses, I'll trade you. I'll send you guys a glass for a glass.
We got a deal.
Anyway, man, this has been a lot of fun. You know, this isn't something I get to do too often, just talk about beer. So it's been really nice hooking up with you guys and just hanging out for a little bit.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us on.
Great time.
Yeah. And if you guys ever need a reviewer in the Pacific Northwest, let me know. I'll be glad to shoot a few your way.
Sounds good. We'll hit you up the next time we're in Seattle.
That sounds perfect. I love it. Can you guys tell everybody where they can find you? I mean, what is it, just Instagram, or where can we listen to your reviews?
Yep. So you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. You know, very soon we're hoping to get YouTube up and running with some additional content, you know, not too far in the future. But for the time being, Instagram and Facebook, it's 90, the number 90, second beer review, like time-wise, 90 seconds. So 90... SECONDBERREVIEW. Check us out on Instagram, Facebook. You know, like we said, short content, beer reviews, just trying to get you in and out quickly.
Yes. For those with ADD and a taste for beer, definitely check these guys out. And we'll be looking forward to that YouTube channel.
Yeah, come find us.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me. Again, I just really appreciate this, just being able to sit down and have a beer and have some fun. So,
thanks a lot, Zach. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Zach.
Cheers.
I want to thank you guys for venturing into the dark blue with us today. If you like what we're doing, make sure you give us that 5-star review on the streaming service of your choice. Also, you can support us monthly via the support tab on our Anchor account or make a one-time contribution on Cash App username Into the Dark Blue. And remember, you are not alone. If you need help or someone to talk to, feel free to message us directly on Instagram or email intothedarkbluepodcast@gmail.com. You can always check out the Get Help page at intothedarkblue.com for a number of other options. Last but not least, guys, know yourselves. Drink smart. Cheers.